Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to another ArsBlog ArsCast right here on arsblog.oleole.com. In a week in which Arsenal crashed out of the Champions League at home to Manchester United, I'll be chatting with Philippe Auclair from France Football in depth, feature length you might say, about the Champions League games, the consequences of the defeat, another trophyless season. What will Arsene Wenger be thinking? Philippe knows Arsene very well, so we'll get some insight from him in just a few moments' time. As well as that, I think we've got a Boué in there, and that's about it. Or we might just have a chat about Nicholas Bentner and his pants, and that's about it. But there's plenty to be going on with, you see. Football, since the last Arscast. Well, we had a game against Portsmouth, which was the warm-up game for the big game on Tuesday. The Champions League, obviously, against Manchester United. 3-0 win. Can't really complain, can you? We had two goals from Nicholas Bentner and a goal from Carlos Vela. Stroll in the sunshine, really, down on the south coast. And there really isn't an awful lot more you can say about that game, other than it assured us of a place in the top four this season. The top three is still mathematically possible, and maybe after Chelsea's defeat to Barcelona in the Champions League, they might be slightly crushed and broken men. I hope so. So if we win, we could get within 3 points of them. You never know what might happen from there. But the main thing is that we're going to finish top four. So Champions League football, at least in the qualification round, is assured for next season. I think that we can all be very happy with, considering where we were not a few short weeks ago. Then, of course, there was Tuesday and the Champions League game against Manchester United. And so much hope and optimism, and maybe it was misplaced a bit. I mean, we beat Manchester United earlier in the season, and, you know, on any day, any team can beat any other team, really. You can't legislate for the two mistakes which put the tie out of reach. That 2-0 down after 11 minutes, it's all over, basically. And I think everyone knew that. The players knew it, the manager knew it, the fans certainly knew it, and it was a shame because the atmosphere looked fantastic and the Grove was rocking with the flags and it all looked brilliant. Kieran Gibbs distraught, and who can blame him? But you can't apportion any blame. He just slipped, and it's happened to countless players, so no finger pointing there. Almunia, who kept us in the first leg, let's not forget, and made, I think, at least two really good saves in the second leg, with a mistake for the goal. I thought it was poor goalkeeping. But these things happen. These things happen. I think even without those two mistakes, Manchester United, over the course of the two legs, show that they're a very, very good team. They're a better team than we are. The hardest part, I think, is that they work harder than us, and they wanted it more than us. And they're the defending European champions. There's no sort of resting on their laurels. We're looking to get to a final for only the second time. We've never won this competition. And, you know, there was a difference. They wanted it more. They ran harder. They worked harder. Rooney back in the left-back position time and time and time again. So that was disappointing. I mean, a bad performance is a bad performance. And over the two legs, I don't think we really troubled United once. One shot from Van Persie, I think it was. So it was disappointing, very disappointing. But maybe a semi-final with this group of players is about the best we can hope for, to be honest. I think, you know, that's something that was mentioned on the blog during the week, that given the group of players that we have and some of the injuries that we've suffered, obviously I think we missed Gallas at the back and Clichy at the back a bit as well. I think the semi-final was realistically as far as we could have hoped to go. So it all was a bit disappointing, but not, what's the word I'm looking for? Not gutting. To me, the game against Chelsea the quarterfinal against Chelsea when Wayne Bridge scored, to me that was much more painful than the way we went out against Manchester United. Even though there are obviously questions raised by the performance of the team and the performance of some of the individuals in the team. And I think it's possibly a watershed moment, because I think Arsene Wenger, for all the faith that he has in these players and in this squad and in some of the young guys, he'll have looked at that and he'll have looked at Manchester United and thought, yeah, I've got to do something about this. Even if you take into account young players will be a little bit better next season, they'll improve, they'll be a bit more experienced, that isn't going to be enough to catch Manchester United, I don't think. Thankfully, it's not a repeat of last year's cunt-fest of a final between Manchester United and Chelsea, even though it provided one of the standout comedy moments of football since all time. It will go down in history as one of the funniest things of all time. It was so funny that it made me not care that Manchester United won the Champions League. John Terry, of course, missing the penalty and then crying is just still, to this day, absolutely hilarious. So the chances of that kind of hilarity being repeated, if they were to have played each other again, I think were very slim. And it would have been much more cunty and awful. So I'm glad that it's Manchester United versus Barcelona, and whatever you might think about Barcelona, I want them to win the final, because they play absolutely beautiful football. It could be a great game. And of course, they're not Manchester United, who are cunts, of course. So there you go. We've got three games left in the season, starting with Chelsea on Sunday. We'll come to that a little bit later on in the show. But for now, I'm pleased to welcome from France Football, Philippe Auclair. Hi, Philippe.
Hello.
The Champions League game against Manchester United, we were unlucky in the first 11 minutes of the game. Gibbs slip and a mistake from Almunia. But I think overall, it would be difficult to argue against the fact that Manchester United, over the two legs, deserved to go through. How do you think that defeat is going to sit with Arsene Wenger, and how will he have looked at the way the teams played each other and what to me is a fairly obvious gulf in quality between them?
I think the gulf in quality is fairly obvious in his mind as well. He looked extraordinarily tired and depressed, should I say, in the press conference which followed the game. Obviously, part of it was due to the disappointment he felt that no real game had taken place. It was a very odd evening. I mean, obviously, for about 7 or 8 minutes, Arsenal actually looked as if they were in control of the game. The shape of the team was good. The energy levels were good. There was good movement, and Manchester United seemed to have decided to sit back and weather the storm and basically defend their advantage. And then, of course, Paul Kieran Gibbs slipped up and you know, the rest. And I think that the disappointment of there not having been a game at all was something that obviously preyed on Arsene's mind, but on the other hand, he was already projecting himself in the future and saying almost as if the season was over, I need to take stock of that and realize what went wrong and analyze what went wrong and take decisions. He wouldn't be drawn onto anything else, but it was pretty obvious that it had been a real shock to the system as far as he was concerned. There's absolutely no doubt that Manchester United were by far the better team. I mean, the difference in class was actually quite embarrassing. I think Stoke gave Manchester United a better game when United won there in the autumn. That's saying something. And as far as Arsene is concerned, I think it is time for him, and he's realized that, to have a serious rethink of many of the tenets of his philosophy as at Arsenal Football Club. It's not just the manner of the defeat. It's also the fact that some of his players failed to turn up yet again. It's the fact that the areas in which he's been told he should do some work and maybe get some help are precisely the areas which caused that defeat, almost humiliation. He was really so down. He was so depressed about it. I've rarely seen him in such a bad mood and such a bad state. I said bad mood, actually, not bad mood, but bad state.
Sure.
Even the 6-1 at Old Trafford was something that was much easier for him to take than that. The biggest night in the club's history for a long, long time. Certainly the biggest tie since the 2004 quarterfinal against Chelsea, which I'm sure you remember.
Mm-hmm.
And
unfortunately.
And there was nobody there, basically. Sure. There was no team. And it's something that... I think he's going to take stock of that, and he's going to take some pretty big decisions in the summer.
Mm. It's interesting. Sorry, Philippe. It's interesting. Like you say, he said in the press conference that he needed some distance from this season and to take stock and look at certain things. But we know Arsene is quite a stubborn man, and you've mentioned that before, that he is or has been quite dedicated to doing things his way and his project. But do you think it's not so much the straw that broke the camel's back, but he is maybe looking at Arshavin coming in and seeing what an impact he's made, the experience and
yes.
the quality that he's brought to the side. And he's looking, and he's obviously got great faith in a lot of these young players. And he's looking now maybe and thinking, okay, well, I've got to augment that with more experience and more quality if we want to have a chance of winning the Champions League, which he so clearly does.
Yes, I mean, I think that's clear. I think that he probably will reflect on the fact that Arsenal were very close to, for example, to acquire Xabi Alonso in August of 2008. And I think anybody who's seen Arsenal this season knows what a player like Xabi Alonso would have brought to that team. It wasn't the case. I remember I was talking to Arsene actually just a few weeks ago, and he said in his defense when we asked the question, why wasn't there a Gareth Barry or a Xabi Alonso coming in the summer when everybody was screaming out for a defensive midfielder who was also somebody who could pass the ball and fit in the Arsenal style of play? And he said, if you do that, you kill young players like Song and Danielson and others, whom he thinks have got a great future and whom he thinks have got tremendous potential and can become players as good and as influential as Xabi Alonso or Gareth Barry. But I think that maybe that is one of the things he's going to think about and maybe come to the same conclusion as many other people have before him, is that his project is admirable in many, many ways. But there is no doubt that the limits of it have been found, and that you can only go so far by being, you know, Arsenal are definitely one of the top 10 European teams. They've proved it in the Champions League year in, year out. They're always there. They're extraordinarily consistent, despite the terrible injury problems and the financial restraints, or constraints, sorry, that Arsenal has got. But obviously there are means to go beyond that, and people are feeling frustration, and I think Arsene is starting to feel the frustration himself, and I think that's the big difference, is that until then, 4 weeks ago, you remember, Andrew, you know, when you talked before the return leg, how confident Arsene was. It was extraordinary. It was as if he were saying, we're going to go through, we're going to win, and we're going to go to Rome, and we're going to win the European Cup, and that will be it. You know, and I believe it, and I believe it, and I believe it. And he really believed it. And he told me, I think, you know, it's probably one of the seasons that I'm the proudest of because of the problems we had, the terrible start we had, and the way we overcame what the obstacles that came our way. And that is, to be honest, true to an extent. But the limits of the project have been exposed. Hmm. And the other thing, which of course is of great interest, is that the situation at the club has evolved an awful lot over the past few months. The situation with Stan Kroenke, the nomination of Ivan Gazidis, the fact that Ivan Gazidis has also brought with him, now recruited, a proper executive cell, and then the fact that the club is going to be run like a proper company now, all this is going to change a lot Arsene's involvement in the club. He's going to be able to stand back a little bit from that side of things maybe and to concentrate on how to build a team from what he's got. Now, what I'm a little bit worried about is the impact this defeat will have on the players who are there And it also made me think again about the crazy choice not to go for the FA Cup. And I'm just thinking, you have now a season that is dead, absolutely dead. You are facing a Chelsea team on Sunday, which has been wounded in a way that is unthinkable by Barcelona last night. Then you're playing Manchester United, who play for the title. And I'm actually a little bit worried about the end of the season, I have to say.
I was going to ask you about that. I mean, because there are three games left. Mathematically, it is still possible to finish in third position. Is he going to be able to get these players motivated for those three games when he obviously had a problem motivating certain players? And I think everybody knows who we're talking about when we say that for the two Champions League semi-final games. I mean, if you've got players who aren't up for Champions League semi-final against Manchester United for a place in the final, what hope do you have in what are essentially, you know, dead games, even though there is the outside hope of something to play for?
I would imagine that the teams that are going to which is going to face Chelsea and Manchester United will bear more than a passing resemblance to the team that won 3-0 in Portsmouth, honestly. I would imagine it's going to rotate the team a great deal. I think Chelsea is probably going to do the same thing for very different reasons. And that maybe that will be one of the ways to prevent the team from going into, I wouldn't say free fall, but from getting some very, very poor results indeed against Chelsea and Manchester United. You can also take an optimistic point of view on that and say that Chelsea will be absolutely, they will be dead. We talked to John Terry last night in Mixon at Stamford Bridge, and it's pretty obvious that the game at Arsenal meant absolutely nothing for him at this stage, that they were so distraught with what happened that, well, they were there for the taking in a way, and that Gosselin as well might use a lot of turnover thinking, well, we've still got the trophy to go for. And on the other hand, Manchester United might be in a situation where they could clinch the title playing against Arsenal at Old Trafford. And judging by the way they're playing at the moment, it's not a very nice prospect for an Arsenal fan to think of that game, is it?
No, not really.
So it's all of this because of 3 minutes of madness, a slip and a free kick. If we're talking just about the incident, which had a direct incident on the game itself, I am a little bit worried. I am worried as well when you're thinking about the shape that the team is going to take for next season, because there are players whom we know are probably thinking about their future at the moment. We know that Theo Walcott and Robin van Persie, their contract expires in 2010. Yet again, the situation has been allowed to occur when it would never occur in any other big club I can think of. And that's one thing I really don't understand. It's one of the reasons why it's so important to have a proper chief executive in place who can actually do this job, because can you think of another of the big four clubs in England or Real or Barcelona or Bayern or whoever, you know, in the big leagues, having two of their so-called major players being 1 year away from being free agents? It's happened so many times.
Yeah, but is it down to the players as well a bit, though? Because
you can. I wouldn't say force the issue, but it's remarkable if you compare, for example, of course, they're in a much easier situation financially and in terms of success on the pitch. If you compare to the way that Manchester United go about their business when it comes to extending their players' contracts, you never hear such things. Never, ever hear such things. Neither do you, at Chelsea, for example, there have been problems with Lampard and Drogba and players like that for completely different reasons because of the way the club was unsettled. Yeah. But they've always been resolved in a positive way for the clubs. In Arsenal's case, it seemed that time and time again, we arrive at a situation where we've got players who are either free agents or 1 year away from being free agents. Mm. And, there was the case with Mathieu Flamini, Alexander Hleb. There was, and actually was very close to invoke the clause that would enable him to actually buy back his contract and so forth. This doesn't happen anywhere else. And that is a problem. And you've got two players, Van Persie and Walcott, who are in the situation. You've also got the situation of Emmanuel Adebayo, which we could go into or not.
We can go into it.
There's the situation of Cesc Fabregas. I have to say that for the first time, I actually feel that there is something which is not right at all. Maybe it's the body language of Cesc Fabregas. I think the player has changed. I think his attitude has changed a little bit. He's not quite the player I saw last season. And I think with good reason. He's been at the club for a very long time. He's been very loyal to the club. He's been an admirable servant for the club. And he's probably asking himself some pretty big questions. And we all know that there is somebody called Florentino Perez arriving at Real in June who will win the presidency, will have an awful lot of money to spend, and who is desperately looking to rebuild the team almost from scratch, and who has, as far as his project is concerned, a couple of players in the defensive midfielder role that he's looking at, and who are basically Xabi Alonso and Cesc Fabregas. We know that. And I'm wondering if that year it might not be a very different scenario from what happened beforehand, despite what Cesc is saying, and which is, I'm sure Cesc is sincere in his desire to stay with the club and build something up. But you know, there's one point where he must ask himself questions. I'm thinking of another case of a player who was absolutely central, totally devoted to his club. And I'm talking not about an Arsenal player, I'm talking about Eric Cantona and Manchester United. Not many people might know this. One of the major reasons why Eric Cantona left Manchester United and retired, he didn't go anywhere else, was the fact that he had been waiting and waiting and waiting for the club to sign players who would enable Manchester United to challenge for a European title. He had been promised this year after year after year. It never happened. And as a result, it was one of the major factors behind the decisions for retiring. I'm not saying Cesc Fabregas is going to retire. What I'm saying is that he must ask himself, well, I can't carry on like this. You know, I've seen my two of my best mates, Alexander Kleb and Mathieu Fleury, leave the club. I haven't seen them replaced, really. What is going on? And you're bound to ask yourself questions. You're bound to ask questions about your future when you're considered by everybody as one of the top players in the game.
And this is obviously now the danger, I suppose, of the project that Wenger has. That you can't keep replacing experience with youth. Then the youth becomes experienced, in the case of Flamini, for example, and is then allowed to leave. So, I mean, those sort of feelings are understandable if Cesc is having that those kind of thoughts. But it's down to the manager now to try and fix this in the summer by bringing in the kind of players who can make us competitive and win trophies. Because the bottom line of it is that we are now going into our fifth season without a trophy.
Correct. And the question everybody must be asking themselves is the money there to do so? And the signals are very contradictory. On one hand, for a long time, the board has been saying, yes, there is money, and we've heard all these figures, 60, 70 million pounds, I mean, huge figures being quoted. But to be honest, I don't think this has ever been the case. And the other thing is that Arsenal actually spent rather a lot of money in January bringing in Andrei Arshavin, probably the best buy the club has done for a very, very long time. Everybody agrees on that. But still, it was a huge chunk of money. And how much is left in the kitty for the summer transfer market, I don't know. And it's hard to imagine that the kind of rebuilding that many fans are thinking of, where you bring in experienced players who are going to cost a lot of money, not just in transfer fees, but also in salaries, this money will have to be found somewhere, and probably through the sale of a couple of players. And I think that Arsene must be thinking about that a great deal at the moment. And I think that one player that everybody's asking themselves question about is Emmanuel Adebayo.
And what do you think? I mean, the quotes that have come out this week about Milan, about...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog.
He's always talking to Milan, and then there's the stage managed sort of story on Arsenal.com about how he wants to give everything back to Arsenal and how he's going to give 150% to win. I mean, if he's going to give 150% next season to win trophies, what's wrong with this season? Why couldn't he start in the Champions League semi-finals? You know, his behaviour is out of order, isn't it?
Well, I'm not in a position to say this sort of thing, because I would say is that his season has been extraordinarily disappointing. I know he's had a few physical problems, and that obviously you can't suddenly find your form just like that, snapping your fingers and going back to being what I wouldn't call a world-class striker, which is the way he describes himself, which I think is slightly presumptuous, really.
Yeah,
but let's not get into that. But his attitude to anybody who's been to the Emirates and every home game, which I've done and seen them on the road quite a few times, has been very questionable in terms of the effort is produced on the pitch and also the quality. It doesn't seem to have improved much. There was one point last season where you thought actually technically he was improving quite a lot, his first touch in particular, which was rather heavy to start with. He was starting to get there, and there was a great deal of desire. He was chasing back. He was closing down. He was doing a lot of defensive work up front, which is absolutely crucial when you're a lone striker. If you look at Drogba, regardless of what people are talking about him today, the way they're talking about him. But this kind of work is absolutely essential, and it's been non-existent this season. And he's been... I won't use the word that I'm thinking of, but he's been an extremely... it's been a very big disappointment, let's put it that way. And I don't think that any Arsenal observer, I'm not even saying fan, would disagree if the club decided to sell him for the kind of money that was offered for him last year. Mm. And that actually might enable Wenger to do something about rebuilding the team. In the interseason, it's really tricky, because on one hand you feel you've got to defend Arsene Wenger for what he's done, because regardless of the disappointments many people have suffered over the past few weeks, let's remember in which state the team was 2 years ago after Thierry Henry had left, and people thought they're going to finish sixth in the league, which wasn't the case, was it? And then at the beginning of the season, when you know it started pretty badly, actually it started awfully with these 5 defeats before November, and you thought the season is over. Well, the season was not over. So there have been positives. There have been players who've come through. There have been also wrong choices. I still think that just throwing away the semi-final against Chelsea in the FA Cup was a very, 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 very big mistake. I don't know how you feel about that, but I remember I was at Wembley when I received the team sheet, and I couldn't believe my eyes.
No, I think everybody was the same, yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I thought, this is crazy. This is crazy. This is the biggest chance of a trophy the club has got this season. There's no doubt about that. Mm. You're choosing a team which is, you know, a decent team, but you're without your best player. You leave your best midfielder out. Why is that? Yeah, you don't understand. And then what was very interesting is that after the game, and I think he spoke about that again yesterday, Arsene mentioned that one of the reasons that he has to have a good look at himself and what he's done this year are the performances against Manchester United and against Chelsea. Mm. And I was thinking, this is really strange, because what kind of message do you give your players when you send them out in the semi-final of a big trophy and you actually make them play without the man who's been their talisman, who's been the instrument of their rebirth in the league? Mm. What kind of message are you sending? Is it the message, you're strong enough without him to do something? Or is it, this game actually doesn't really matter that much. I'm more interested in third place in the league, which I think we can get, and which will, you know, which means that we won't have to go through the preliminary round of the Champions League, where we could meet some pretty nasty clubs.
But surely he must have that day, and I disagreed entirely with his team choice. I thought he should have picked Arshavin. But surely he sent out a team that he thought could win the game.
But that's the thing, is that what you must question is the judgment he put on the team. You know, it's a big thing to say, because, you know, Arsene Wenger knows far more about football than you, I, and every person listening to the Arsecast does. But on the other hand, doesn't mean he can't make mistakes that are absolutely obvious to all of us. Mm. There is a point where you are so caught in your own vision of what the club should be, and when your decisions, in a way, become means to justify the choices you make. Mm. If you see what I mean. You have a vision of what the club should be like, and it's a very noble, very beautiful vision. And every step you take is actually meant to justify and to prove that you are right. And sometimes you're plainly wrong, but you carry on doing the same thing because the vision is really beautiful. You're blinkered. And it's something that I think has been a major criticism of Arsene over the years, is the fact that there is nobody who became, no sounding board, so to speak, no assistant. Compare, for example, Alex Ferguson at Manchester United has always had assistants who could actually, if not challenge, help him to refresh his vision of things, which is, you know, and it was people like Brian Kidd. It was people like Steve McLaren, who's actually a bloody good coach, even if he's not a great manager, but a bloody good coach. Carlos Queiroz, who certainly was instrumental in recreating the new Manchester United, which we see now. All these people have played a huge role in making this club extremely big. Now, at Arsenal, the situation has been that Arsenal has been working with the same team for a very, very, very long time. And I'm not sure that anyone in that team is necessarily, even though they're perfectly well qualified, no doubt about that, but is in a position where they have the authority to question sometimes the manager's choice and to help him see his own role in a different light and therefore progress. And that is something maybe Arsene needs a new assistant. Maybe the most important signing for Arsene Wenger wouldn't be players. We've got some wonderful players in this club, but would be actually somebody who would help him refresh his own vision of things and take some of the load of him, but also be there, you know, the good cop, bad cop, so to speak, be there to contradict him from time to time, if that was the case. And David Gideon has gone, who was fulfilling that role for a while. So there is really nobody at the moment who is helping Arsene redefine this vision. And I hope he stays true to this vision of beautiful football and flowing football and trusting youth and all these wonderful things which have made, you know, Arsenal a club that is loved all over the place, all over the world. But on the other hand, we need something else. And it's fairly clear that there is a lack of authority, there is a lack of moral fiber. I mean, Andrew, the number of times Arsene has been talking about the mental strength of these players this year.
Yeah.
Now, put yourself back at the Emirates against Manchester United. Okay, Kieran Gibbs slips and Park Ji-sung scores his first goal. The situation of Arsenal at this point in the tie is certainly no worse, is actually better than the situation of Liverpool when they arrived at Stamford Bridge having been beaten 3-1 at Anfield.
Yeah.
What I saw at Stamford Bridge when Liverpool played there was a team that thought, we don't care, we're going to go through, we're going to fight for absolutely everything. And did I get this feeling at the Emirates when Park Ji-sung scored? No. I thought, that's it, that's over, finished.
Do you think,
and I mean, the fact that I felt that, and I think probably 60,000 people felt like me, shows that there is something which is lacking, missing, at the very heart of the team.
Is that down to, I mean, Arsene's hugely supportive in public of the team and talks about the mental strength and talks about the,
yeah,
you know. Do you think that's maybe more to convince himself than the players? Because I know what he's trying to do and boost their confidence and make them believe, etc.,
yeah,
etc. But, you know, if he repeats it often enough himself, then it becomes true, even though we've seen evidence to the contrary.
There are moments this season, to be fair to him, where they have shown this kind of mental strength. I was very impressed with, you know, at Roma, despite playing not very well, and the way they behaved in the penalty shootout, which is, you know, a real test of mental strength.
Sure.
They were fantastic. There were other occasions during the season where they showed capacity to come back, to fight back, and they did. But so I'm trying to be the devil's advocate this time.
Yeah.
But to be honest, I would have to agree with you. I think there's an awful lot of Arsene's communication with the media. He uses them as a means to pass on a message to his players. When he says, my team has got incredible mental strength and so forth, he wants his players to read that in the press, in the paper the next morning. It's fairly obvious. He's not just trying to convince himself that he's right, and he's not trying to paint himself a picture that is rosy. I think he's really trying he's using that communication, media, as a means to reinforce his team. But the message has sounded hollow at times, and it has never sounded as hollow as it did on that particular evening, because it was obvious that there was desire in the team. We saw it for 7 minutes, but there was also an obvious lack of organization as well. One thing I noticed, when Manchester United, and I'm really sorry to hit the nail on the head like that, when Manchester United had the ball, and, for example, a Rooney or a Park or a Fletcher was passing the ball into space, which is, you know, anybody who's played football knows that you do two things when you pass the ball. You either pass it to somebody you see, or you pass it into a space where you expect one of your partner's teammates to be. Every time Manchester United did that, somebody was there to pick up the pass. Every time an Arsenal player was doing the same thing, passing into a channel, passing in space where somebody should be there, what you could see were a couple of players looking up, looking at each other, wondering, oh, should I be there? Should I not be there? There was such a lack of spatial organization. It was embarrassing. It was really embarrassing. And this lack of communication is all the more embarrassing that this team has actually been together, even though they're very young. These guys have been together for a very long time. If you look at it, Andrew, you know, it's the same thing. They're very young. But this group of players has been together for several seasons. They're not newcomers. They're not discovering each other. They've played together in the reserves, in the youth teams, in the Carling Cup, in the FA Cup, and then Premier League, and then the Champions League. And there is a lack of tactical organization which is a little bit worrying, and which is exposed when suddenly you are playing against a team of the caliber of Manchester United. And let's repeat that, this is a team of the highest caliber, the best team in the world, full stop. So you could expect to be found out in some areas, but to be found out to such an embarrassing degree is something quite different. And there are issues as well which are not solved, such as the responsibilities and positions of some key players. I don't know what your opinion was of Cesc Fabregas, but he tried hard, I think, on that particular night, but I don't think he had a very clear idea where he should position himself. Mm. Robin van Persie had no clue as to where he should put himself. Should he be an extra midfielder? Should he place himself on the right? Should he be a shadow striker? He didn't know. Well, the fact that Adebayo hardly did anything didn't help anybody. Samir Nasri, at some point, was playing deep, as from memory, because that's the role he'd been playing against Liverpool, for example, and with I think, great success. I think he's got a real future in this kind of holding midfielder role. But it was also sometimes on the left, drifting back in, not knowing really where to go. People were not covering space for each other. It was really haphazard. And as long as the score was 0-0, because of the energy, because of the desire to go forward, which was obvious and real, you know, it worked okay. But as soon as the goal was scored, you could see that there was total disorganization in the team. Total. And which really worried me. And after 8 minutes, to be honest, and I think that many people will feel the same way, in a way, I didn't feel saddened or depressed by this game. I felt just a huge, it's not even disappointment, it's like it hadn't happened. I don't know how you felt about it, but it's just...
it wasn't unexpected, was it? Because I think...
No, it's not, but it's the mood. I mean, it's extraordinary. You know, after 30 minutes, there were people leaving the ground.
Yeah.
Could you believe that?
Yeah.
And the atmosphere before kickoff was astonishing. And during the first 5 minutes, it was astonishing. And then so people just realized, well, there's no way we're going to win this. Yeah. And that's that. There's no way. And it's... That is why many people I've talked to told me, actually, I felt much sadder. I would feel much sadder if we'd gone to the wire and we'd won 2-1 and lost on the away goals. I'd be really gutted. But I don't feel gutted. I feel really empty instead.
Sure. Philippe, we better leave it there. It's been fascinating. We could probably go on for much longer, but I'm not sure I've got that much space on my hard drive to record it all. But listen, thank you very much for taking the time, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
I told you it was in-depth, didn't I? Sure did. Thank you very much to Philippe for taking the time to talk to the Arscast, and as soon as I can afford a big enough hard drive, we'll have him right back on. Still to come, we'll be talking about the Chelsea game coming up on Sunday. As well as that, we'll be talking about Nicholas Bentner's pants, I suppose. We'll get team news and all that kind of stuff, but now, this.
Now it's time to be at home with Emmanuel Eboué. Oh, yeah.
Welcome to my home. I am Eboué. Eboué like pants. Top 3 Eboué pants. Number 1, cargo pants. Eboué once used cargo pants to transport 400 tons of industrial solvent down Suez Canal. Number 2, dungarees. One day Eboué hoped to go to Australia to see dungarees hopping around in wild. Number 3, Eboué pants, hot pants. Because Eboué have ass like Kylie. Kylie O'Toole, 20 stone factory worker from Wexford, but Kylie nonetheless. Are you go now?
Tune in next week for more At Home with Eboué. Oh, baby.
And speaking of pants, after the game against Manchester United on Tuesday, some of the boys went out. Well, we don't know which of them went out. We know Nicholas Bentner did, because he was photographed coming out of a nightclub with his pants falling down. which is, I don't know quite how that happens. He must have been really, really quite drunk indeed, because I generally know when my pants are down or not. Like, 7 times out of 10, I know. So he was trying to hide his face, and while doing so, was giving the footballing world, the footballing paparazzi, a good shot of his underwear. And it's a good job that he isn't like Lindsay Lohan or one of those people, flashing his bits, not wearing underwear. For what? There's a good reason for underwear. Thankfully, Nicholas wore his. And then released a statement, of course, on Arsenal.com saying he let everyone down and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, he's a young guy. He went out and had a couple of drinks, maybe a couple more, then a few shots, some Jaegers, a few tequilas, mojito or two, caipirinha, Bloody Mary. Who knows? Maybe all of them in one glass. Because that would explain the whole pants falling down and not knowing. But, you know, young guys go out and do have drinks every now and again. I don't think it's the end of the world. He's probably just very disappointed. I have to say, I had a couple of drinks myself on Tuesday night to ease the pain. Don't see why Bentner should be any different. And, yeah. But someone needs, obviously, to tell him, you know, you can't do that kind of stuff in public. Or you shouldn't get photographed if you're going to do it. You know, there's a time and a place, and there are ways and means in which to have your fun. And it's at times like this, when an incident such as this comes to pass, that one can't help be reminded of something that a great man once said back in the 1980s. Even to this day, I think his advice rings true, and it's something that maybe Nicholas should take heed of. Isn't that right, Jermaine? And frankly, anyone who can't learn from Jermaine Stewart, they just can't be helped. Just can't be helped. The man was visionary, really, wasn't he?
Really was.
Cherry wine, though, I'm not sure about that. Anyway, Chelsea on Sunday. 3 games left this season. Motivation for those games amongst fans and players, I'm sure, will be somewhat lower than it might have been. Instead of being games that would take us to a final, in which we needed to keep our form up. There are 3 games that don't really mean anything. We can't possibly finish in third if we beat Chelsea, if we beat Manchester United, and if we beat Stoke, and then Chelsea don't win against somebody else along the way. Yeah, so maybe it'll be a good time to play Chelsea after their heartbreaking, for them, of course, defeat to Barcelona in the Champions League on Wednesday night. And they're rather shameless and horrible antics after the game. Maybe their heads won't be focused. They won't be right. They'll still be full of injustice and bile and bitterness. And, well, that may translate into a big performance against Arsenal. Or maybe it's just a good time for us to play them and take some revenge for the FA Cup semi-final. Arshavin will be in the squad. The only team news is that he will be back in the squad. It's the same squad that played or was picked for Tuesday night against United. Gael Clichy won't play again this season, as we suspected. No big surprises there. He's going to rest his back injury. And you just have to hope that we can keep our unbeaten run, which is 21 games, keep it going to 24 to the end of the season. And let's hit the ground running next season. We got to take our small little glories where we can get them. So there you go. It has been a rather lengthy Arsecast at the end of a disappointing kind of a week. But that's football for you. We've been experiencing far too many disappointments of late. But without these times, the good times won't be half as good. Because you can think back on these times and go, fuck, that was crap and this is brilliant. Those days will come sooner rather than later, I do hope. But for now, we'll leave it there because that's far too much listening. Your ears are probably worn out. I will, of course, talk to you all weekend on the blog, all next week on the blog, and on next week's Arsecast. So until then, take it easy. Cheerio, bye-bye.
Well, yes. We have completed all the research into this very subject, and having collated all the data that we've collected down through the years, we put it into the supercomputer, you see, with a program that takes all the variables and jiggles them around in a very exact way. It's too difficult to explain to the layperson like yourself. And then the results of that data, of course, are cross-checked against many other studies that we've taken part in other parts of the world, online, and in various respected scientific communities. And when you put it all together, the inescapable conclusion that we come to is that Ashley Cole is a little cunt.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.